Welcome back to episode 86 of the Meat Mafia podcast. On today's episode, we had on the founder of the Carnivore Bar, Philip Meese. The Carnivore Bar is a simple beef bar inspired by the original pemmican recipe used by Native Americans with only three simple ingredients: beef, tallow, and salt. Philip realized the need for the Carnivore Bar while he was deployed overseas in the Army. He joined the military the healthiest he'd ever been and returned home sick and out of shape, largely due to the nutrient-lacking diets and lifestyle of the armed services when deployed. In our conversation with Philip, we discussed his inspiration for creating the Carnivore Bar, utilizing a carnivore diet to improve his health, Ansel Keys and the story of military food rations, and Stephenson's experimenting with a meat-only diet. We cover a lot of carnivore topics on this podcast, particularly around using a meat-based diet to improve your health and how the Carnivore Bar fits into that diet. Philip's an amazing guy. This was a fantastic conversation, and I hope you enjoy. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Equip Foods. Equip provides a complete source of grass-fed beef protein with no added chemicals, fillers, binding agents, or artificial coloring or sweeteners. If you're familiar with the supplement industry, you know that most supplements are loaded with ingredients that you can't even pronounce. Equip's Unflavored Prime has one single ingredient derived directly from grass-fed beef protein. For purists like ourselves who try to only consume balanced, real sources of nutrition, this protein powder checks all the boxes. Go check them out in the link below and use our promo code in the description to get a discount. We get questions all the time about how to incorporate beef liver into a healthy, balanced diet. The questions are usually around how to source high-quality beef liver, how to overcome the taste of liver, and how to travel and still be able to include beef liver into your diet. That's why we love Optimal Carnivore, which provides beef liver supplements as well as an organ complex for people to incorporate beef liver without the taste and with the convenience of just being able to pack it into a bag and toss it into your mouth when you're ready for your supplements. Beef liver is an important part of my diet because it provides me with the B12, copper, vitamin A that you can't really get from any other food groups. Beef liver is truly nature's vitamin, and being able to incorporate it in such an easy form, such as this supplement, makes it that much better. Go check out Optimal Carnivore and let us know what you think. All right, we're rolling. Philip Meese, welcome to the Meat Mafia podcast. It's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're pumped to have you on. We were just talking about how much we enjoy your bars, the Carnivore Bar, and how for both Harry and I, you know, we've gone down the animal-based carnivore rabbit hole for the last few years. So to actually have real foods, real food products that exist without any compromise is awesome. And I think you have, you sent us a sample of three and we both independently crushed all three in one sitting. So that speaks to how good they are.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah. We've been working like 3 years on the project. So yeah. I'm really happy with where we've gotten right now with the crunch and the macros and the creamy texture. It's satiating and filling. And that was the whole point.
Yeah. And what you're doing speaks to a lot of our core ethos to the Meat Mafia podcast, because we talk a lot about, you know, trying to do things to create sustainable eating habits. And one of the things we talked about is how for a lot of people that are on the road, that's, you know, it's a point of anxiety, especially when you're starting to go down this rabbit hole, because it's very difficult when you're in an airport or you're traveling, there's a convenience store, there feels like there's almost nothing available. But then even bags of beef jerky at a convenience store, a lot of times they're added with added sugar, or frankly, they just don't have enough fat content. So we feel that you've really been able to solve for that. And it's just been amazing to see the growth of the company.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, it's filling the same niche as like a nut butter or a fat bomb or something like that, but it's animal based. And so, you know, ancestrally, you wouldn't have like fields and fields and fields of nuts. You know, you'd have an animal and then you'd have to deal with that animal. And so if you have a travel food, the Carnivore Bar is based off of pemmican, which is this Native American food that was created before refrigeration was even a thought in anybody's mind. And it's high fat, comes from, I think, a Cree word, pimuk. I'm probably saying it wrong, but essentially it means grease. So I've read about it, haven't heard it pronounced, but travel grease is how you relocate from place to place for Native Americans who are tracking and following bison. So they're hunting bison and they're going from place to place, relocating their their whole camp. And it's like this 800 mile giant circle, like serious hike. You're burning a lot of calories, and you get to that place, you may not see the buffalo, you know, technically bison, for a long time. And so to travel, to relocate, to have travel food, they would make pemmican. Mm-hmm. And so it's a vital part of being animal based and has been for thousands and thousands of years.
It's Harry, really, because I came across pemmican this year, earlier this year. I was talking to someone and he had done the through hike on the Pacific Ridge, and he's done it twice and he wants to do it a third time. And the previous two times that he did it, he had done it on a high carb diet. They basically were joking, mm-hmm. saying that like these through hikes, it doesn't matter what you eat because you're not going to put on any weight. Like you can just like eat whatever you want. So like Snickers bars are a big deal on these hikes. Like you basically trade, like food is basically a currency on these hikes. Right. And they absolutely. Oftentimes trade, you know, whatever they got their hands on with other people, just as like a, you know, fun little thing to do. But then he goes, I want to do it animal based. I want to use pemmican, to do this through hike next time. And I was like, what is pemmican, man? Like it sounds cool, but I had never seen it or heard of it. And I guess that's exactly what your bar is.
Yeah. I mean, hiking just burns an astronomical amount of calories. Mm. And so you got to really think about how much weight you really want in your pack. So my background is as a soldier. So as a combat medic, and it was distressing to me that we couldn't have healthy food on the battlefield. We just had, you know, caffeine, sugar, and nicotine. It's like, right. Those are the basic food groups. And so we ate like crap for a year, and that tends to catch up to you. But like on the through hike, you're burning all those calories, you're walking, you're kind of insulated against the effects of gaining weight, but you know, it's really not optimal. It's not, you know, it's not inflammatory free,
right.
But you're able to get rid of it and burn all of those calories. Because of our modern like landscape, we have all these calories, we have all this junk trash food that's just energy, but like not the kind you want.
Yeah.
And so for us, it's this gleeful, like, yay, I can eat everything. But
right.
Ancestrally, it would have been really kind of like, how am I going to prevent myself from losing muscle mass over this journey? Cause I got to get to A to B, there are no roads. You know, I do not want to lose 30 pounds of muscle on this trek.
Mm-hmm.
So it instantly becomes, you know, the modern is, oh, fun, I can eat anything. And then the ancestral is like, oh crap, I have to really plan, because every pound that I put in my pack is going to burn more calories because I'm moving it.
Right.
So you get into this different mindset about calories, energy density, and what would be efficacious and comfortable too. Cause you don't want to eat like, you know, 5,000 calories of say broccoli or something really fibrous.
Right.
It's like, neither do you want to carry it. So you want, you know, density not only to be like in the nutrition, but also in the weight. You want it to be like per ounce, very, very energy dense. And fat is just far and away the very best way to do that.
Sorry, Brad, sorry to cut you off, but I was just going to say, maybe for the audience, like break down the ingredients that's in this bar, because I know it's really simple and it's high fat for a particular reason, but maybe you could just break it down and talk about why the high fat content is a little bit unique for this type of bar.
Sure. It's beef tallow salt, and we also hold the salt on one of them. So we do make a honey version, which is raw honey. So it's beef tallow and salt is kind of like cow and a right. little dash of salt or a little dash of honey. And we use Redmond real salt, which doesn't have any microplastics. You know, you prevent all the heavy metal contaminants of getting something out of the ocean, which is a tragedy, but you know, you go for this healthy non-iodized sea salt and you get all these microplastics and heavy metals. It's like, oh, you know, yeah. Out of the fire into the frying pan. You know, or I mixed that up, but you get the gist. But the, you know, you're trying to avoid contaminants. You're trying to control the ingredients and eat healthy. We do grass-fed, grass-finished beef from Joyce Farms. We source the tallow from the same place that we source the meat. So it's just all grass-fed, grass-finished. We didn't actually start that way because we're not ideologically motivated, but the engineering of the texture became too difficult to switch gears to go back and forth. And so we went with our better seller. Grass fed, grass finished is regenerative. It's kind of inoculated against the climate concerns because it is carbon negative, not neutral, but negative. It puts carbon in the soil, regenerates the soil, increases the nutrition and the flavor. So it's kind of like, well, we don't want to be, you know, grass finished or bust, you know, carnivores say eat the meat you can afford. And we like that. And we wanted to be supportive of that initially, but it just became logistically impossible for us to hold on to all those different SKUs. So we went with what was working in the grass fed, grass finished. So these high quality ingredients, no additives, no fillers, absolutely only just nutrition. And so that was kind of the concept to cater to the carnivore community and the ancestral health, paleo, you know, and expand. And that's why we went with the raw honey as an addition, because not everybody wants it 100% plain. And honey is an animal product. It's, you know, something that the Hazda tribe are currently eating, and they're the last hunter and gatherers around. It's like, well, they seem pretty healthy. You know, it may not be the honey. Like, honey may trigger some people and may be bad for some people, but, you know, ancestrally speaking, it doesn't really fit the narrative. Grass fed, grass finished, raw honey, that's something that we've been eating for some time.
Yeah. And that's part of the issue with certain people within the carnivore community, is there's a lot of dogmatism, I think, around the diet. And there's almost like this religious undertone to it sometimes, and people get so bent out of shape of like honey versus no honey. And it's like, you're not saying it's one way or the other, but for people that are more animal based and want to have honey, which is an animal based ingredient, you're offering that up to them too. So we totally support it.
I avoid things that would be common in meat bars, like spices. There are, you know, different like thesis hypothesis of like what creates a healthy diet. You know, I'm obviously going through this, you know, anthropology, cave painting kind of iconography. Like, okay, it's like what we're doing now isn't working. Like, let's go back. And so, you know, there are spices that are, that have been used over time, but what amounts, what variants, what genetics, it's unclear where to draw the line there. And so I like the bar how it is, but, you know, I avoid, like, there are oxalates, salicylates, sulfur compounds, phthalates, just like different kinds of phytic acid in very small amounts in spices that some people would be sensitive to. So maybe we expand there later, but, you know, people, when they see like a meat bar, they're expecting like sugar, barbecue, meat, savory. They want all the full flavor. And so this is kind of a shock when they have just beef tallow salt. But it's that way on purpose. We intended it to be that way.
Yeah. And that's a big reason why we wanted to have you on, is like, you know, we have done some affiliates with a few different products, but we've been very intentional about not wanting to associate ourselves too much with some of these CPG products that are out there. But when I started seeing some of the biggest advocates in the carnivore community, like Judy Cho, Dr. Chafee, who's like the ultimate purist, starting to advocate on behalf of you, I remember thinking to myself, okay, there definitely has to be something here. And your bar checks the boxes for so many people, where it's like, it's the, got that pure product where it's like 3 to 4 ingredients max. Then you're also touching on the grass-fed, grass-finished, regenerative stuff, which a lot of people in the CPG space don't do, frankly, because the margins aren't great. So it's way easier to just get a corn finished product. So do you mind just talking a little bit about why it was so important for you to like stay true to a lot of these principles?
So to me, it's biochemistry. I was doing research for this podcast, just, you know, watching, seeing what conversations you've had before. And I really, the seed oil revolution, you know, those are my kind of people. So, they really touched on a lot of these elements of how ubiquitous seed oils are and how much oxidative stress they put on the body, and how biochemically, like all the way down to the single cells in your body, are like freaking out when you put something that is just exuding all these cytokines and inflammatory markers. So it's really like what kind of set me off was the carnivore diet in general. I started when I heard of Michaela Peterson's story on Joe Rogan. And I was like, oh my gosh, you can live off just meat. And so that tied back in to my Afghanistan troubles, woes, not being able to eat healthy food. I was paleo at the time, 2012. I was reading Rob Wolf's book and I was excited. I was paleo and I was like trying to do CrossFit and I was like, I was loving it. And then I went overseas and got on a bunch of antibiotics and I ate a bunch of trash food and wrecked my health. And I was like, oh, I'm trying to do all these things, but like food is really overlooked. It's like, you can't move your way past a bad diet. I tried and I fell flat on my face. And so realizing that, I was looking into all the biochemistry and all these like micronutrients and all these supplements. I had like all these different things. I'd read a new paper and then try a new, like, oh, this helps this pathway, or this is MTHFR. And like, you know, this does this, and this is this, and this form of this vitamin, you know, is limited by this. It's like, you just go down these rabbit trails and then you end up buying like a bunch of high-tech products you do not need. And then I heard, oh, you can live off just meat. And it reversed all these inflammatory conditions. And I was like, holy crap. You know, we were joking in the military of like, man, I wish we just had like a meat MRE, meal ready to eat. And it's like, yeah, but well, you know, green leafy vegetables, we wouldn't include the other stuff that you need. You gotta have all these other, you know, antioxidants and, you know, phytochemicals. It's like, it's just plant chemical. There's no indication that you need it. not transparently, not saying you do or you don't. It's just, we had all this dogma of you got to eat your vegetables. You got to eat your vegetables. Yes. And right. So it's like, when I'm thinking about an MRE, it's like, well, it would be useless to make a meat MRE because you'd be missing all this. And so then in the carnivore community, it was like, we can survive for 20 plus years on meat. I was like, light bulb. It's like, I've read about this in history class, pemmican. There were pemmican wars, you know, that we fought over making this food. And I was like, okay, cool. If I make pemmican, in theory, I could live off of it. Yeah. And it would be everything I needed. So, you know, that's where the wheels started turning. I was like, okay, cool. If I ever want to leave, Max, sorry, my dog.
No, it's all good.
He heard you say pemmican. He just got all excited.
yeah. He's tasted it. He approves. So the deal is like something you can live off of, not something that's going to be an entertaining snack. Like that is the key. Cause I had pallets of marathon bars, pallets of, you know, Cliff bars. And, you know, my limit of Cliff bars is 7. It's like, by the time you eat 7, you're sick. You're not going to eat another Cliff bar for the rest of the week.
Well, they're loaded with seed oils too. I mean, I think like all of these bars that are meant to be like this health movement, they're loaded with canola oil.
Yeah. And so you just feel sick if you eat multiple of them. And the MREs were even worse. They stopped you up. Like people's digestive health just went, you know, really downhill fast. Like they were taking DocuSate and loperamide daily, you know, the pill to poop, the pill not to poop. And these are soldiers. These are like 18, 20 year old, like should be peak condition, should be peak health, just not being able to sleep, addicted to Ambien, all kinds of sleep aids, all kinds of mood stabilizers, Wellbutrin, like they're just wrecked. They can't sleep. They can't digest their food. They're spiraling during this year. It's like, we put all these preservatives on food to stop microbes from breaking down that food outside our bodies. Then we put it in our bodies with all these microbes and we expect those microbes to suddenly be able to just break down that food so we can absorb it. It's like,
right.
No, the preservatives are still working. It's like your microbiome needs to help you break down that food. And in addition to that, we're also taking prophylactic for malaria. We're taking doxycycline. We're taking broad spectrum antibiotics every single day for a year.
Wow.
In addition to eating preservative laden food. So we're just wrecking our health. We're just absolutely wrecking our health. I mean, we're not dying of malaria. Malaria is a serious threat. So I don't want to diminish that. But at the same time, like, God, we really got to do something about battlefield nutrition. And incidentally, you know, having a travel food that actually sustains you, that isn't just going to make you hungrier. Because if I eat really lean jerky or biltong, nothing against that. I love both.
Yes.
It's just in isolation, it's just not sustaining. You can't think, you can't move, you can't communicate and shoot. That's the shoot, move, and communicate are the three infantry, like core values, so to speak. And you got to be able to do that. You got to be able to stay sharp. You got to be able to move and keep moving in extreme environments. It's like, we need the nutrition for that. And in our modern life, you know, it's answering emails and it's high-paced, anxiety-provoking days. It's like, you need energy for that too. Your brain is even more energy, you know, consuming than your body. So it's one of those things where without the energy, without the tallow, without the animal fat, you're really not solving any of these problems, which means that you're tied to your kitchen. You're tied to your grocery store.
Mm-hmm. The ironic part of the story too, is the guy who's largely attributed with the demonization of saturated fat, Ansel Keys, was previously working on battlefield nutrition during World War II. And he came up with the bar that's like the fibrous vegetable, like bar for battlefield nutrition. So I can't help but think that this is like the exact opposite of that, where it actually has the sustenance that you need to be out on the battlefield and think and do all the things that are demanded of you when you're out there.
Exactly. He invented the K-ration.
Right.
And he actually went a step further. He tested pemmican.
Really?
But what he did is he didn't give them any salt to convert. So when you go keto, you have this antidiuretic hormone, ADH, that your kidneys produce that mean that your adaptation period, like the week or so, week or two sometimes, where people lose all their electrolytes when they go on zero carb. So he put soldiers who'd eating just a regular diet on extremely excessively high fat pemmican. So they were getting the runs. It was just going right through them. So they were just getting cleaned out. And then he had them going out in the heat and do heavy manual labor on their first day of keto adaptation with the keto flu.
Yeah.
And they performed poorly. And so he was like, see, I told you so. This doesn't work. Because people had, you know, experience. William Stephenson, Arctic explorer, people talked about pemmican. It was legendary.
Yes.
And so he needed to first do a PR campaign to pull that down so that he could pull up his profit-making K-Rash.
Mm-hmm. That's so actually
fascinated it.
That's actually an amazing story. And that was one of the big things that Dr. Chafee hit on when he came on the podcast, is that there are so many studies out there of different, whether it's indigenous tribes or humans like Stephenson that have done red meat experiments and have cured a variety of different maladies and diseases. But a lot of the literature has been completely discarded because it goes against this mainstream narrative. I mean, for anyone that doesn't know the Stephenson experiment, I think what happened was he ended up getting stranded with the Inuits and the Eskimos. He had no supplies, no rations. So he was forced to eat all this very fatty meat that the Inuits lived off of. And he thought he was going to die. And he noticed, right? Like he not only did he feel good, he felt better than he had ever felt.
Yep.
So he came back and was like, well, I don't need fruits and vegetables. I just need fat. I need animal products. So he conducted an experiment. I think it was like the Bellevue study where he ate nothing but red meat for a year straight and felt so good that the only time that he didn't feel good, he got sick and he wasn't eating enough saturated fat. So he started introducing a bunch of sausage and a bunch of bacon. And then he felt extremely fine afterwards. His blood results were impeccable, I think.
Yeah. A couple other people did that study with him to verify that it wasn't just him and his genetic abnormality, but importantly, when he was with the Inuit, it was dried fish. It was dried fish. It was exceptionally lean. And what they do is they hunt the mammals and they render the tallow, or I don't know if it's called tallow, if it's seal or whale blubber, and yes, and they dip their they dipped every single piece of the dried fish into it. And he asked them if you could eat it plain. He's like, no. Every single piece of lean meat had to be dipped in the fat.
Wow.
And he tried eating it plain, and it was like, because it's kind of off-putting. It was like big glob bowl of fat. And he's like, you have to dip it in. And it's like, he did it and it felt amazing. So it's really about that saturated animal fat. That, like you said, with the sausage, like the study that they did, they repeated the same phenomenon. It's like, without that fat, you don't have the energy. And so you need, in a survival ration, you need the branched chain amino acids. You're not going to get any better than red meat. And you also need the essential fatty acids and enough saturated fat to provide you the energy. But even one further, red meat, specifically red meat, has L-carnitine, which helps shuttle in the long chain fatty acids for beta oxidation. So you're never going to feel better on keto unless you're eating red meat and you're getting that L-carnitine so you can actually shuttle those long chain fatty acids into the mitochondria.
That's it. Yeah, that's such a good point. And a lot of this, I think you said, was fueled off of your own experience with the carnivore diet in 2018. Can you just tell us a little bit more about your story and kind of what convinced you to go carnivore and just your own experience eating all animal products?
Sure. So it's a bit of a saga, but I'll try to hit the high notes. In 2008, I did CrossFit. I had exercise induced asthma, and I cured it with short bursts of high intensity exercise. So my working thesis was exercise cures everything. I was on three different medications. It was amazing. It was a revolution. So I couldn't breathe. I was never going to be an athlete. I was sick. I was always kind of the pudgy kid. I had asthma since I was four. So, I was like, okay, game over. I'm never going to be, super stud. I'm never going to be doing athletic fun things. I just have to stay inside and not go out and get allergies or anything like that. And so adventure was over. And then I found CrossFit and I deadlifted until I needed my inhaler and then stopped. So 10-minute workout, 15-minute workout, 20-minute workout. And then suddenly I ran my first 5K and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm healed. This is amazing. And the economy took a dive. So I said, well, what am I going to do? I want to keep this newfound lease on life. I'll join the army, get college money, go for a graduate degree. I don't know what I'll do. I'm just going to stay healthy and try to figure it out. Got derailed. So I got terribly derailed. And so then I started thinking more about food and health as I came back in, looked at all the different medical things I could do, got really into keto, read a whole bunch of books, did a 10-year deep dive study on what makes us healthy, kind of got nowhere, learned a lot about physiology. And that helped me when I finally heard about carnivore movement. But I was, I kind of, at that point I was on, I had dysbiosis, my gut was totally messed up. I was, trying to figure out health hacking stuff. I was spending tons of money on all this junk, eating grass-fed, grass-finished beef. And I was like, I do feel a little better when I eat that. But I was eating green smoothies, all this dried green stuff. I was doing iodine. I was playing around with different supplements. I was buying expensive beds that were, didn't have flame retardant. I was just doing the whole works, and getting nowhere. And so, from there, I was on methylphenidate to try to focus to get through my schoolwork. And it was just burning me to the ground. I wasn't able to recover from my workouts. And so dysbiosis, can't absorb my food, and then burning those adrenals, just pedal to the metal, go with that basically meth. And so it wasn't helping me study. I was just falling asleep, with anxiety. And so from there, from that pain point, I was like, okay, I need to slow down. I'm going to stop this drug. I'm going to try to work out. I'm going to try to focus and devote my life to health. And my career and my whole future is going to take a backseat because I don't got it. I gotta give up. So I went to paramedic school and I was like, I'm just going to take combat medic. What I'm good at, I love it. I'm just going to do that in the civilian world. They don't give you the paramedic cert. They only give you the EMTB. So you have to go to extra school after you get out of the Army. So I was going to extra school and I was doing a 12-hour shift. And during that 12-hour shift, there was free cake and pizza. And like in room number one, there's a patient with dementia, you know, who just is like diabetes type three, you know, they're kind of like sugared brain. And then there's in room number two, there's somebody with alcoholism who's hurt themselves, who's cut their arm. And then in the next room over, there's somebody with acute diabetes and they have a injury on their foot because they're, you know, they can't feel it and they've injured their foot. And then, you know, it was just room after room after room after room, all like carb-related metabolic injuries. And then the nurses and doctors are overweight and they're all eating cake and pizza. And I was like, man, it's 12-hour shift. What am I going to eat? And I go to the, you know, go to the vending machine in a Hail Mary. And there's a tiny, like 1 ounce bag of Jack Links. And I get it and I turn it over and it's like gluten, soy, you know, and it's just like, God, so I eat it, you know, I eat it. Like I find a couple of like sticks, Slim Jim kind of things in a corner somewhere. And I'm just miserable. And I'm like, gosh, you know, I just found carnivore, the theory. And I was like, I've got to do something about this. And this is something I know a lot about. And, you know, so then I was thinking about pemmican and I was like, you know, I'm just going to make pemmican. I'm going to go do a Kickstarter, see if people want this thing. And, you know, that was the catalyst. It was that 12-hour shift. And I knew I was going to have to do so many rotations for free. And then I was going to have to do it for like barely over minimum wage for the rest of my life. And I was just like, gosh, there's got to be a better way. This pain point is something I might be able to solve, not only for myself so that I can live a life, but also for others. So I threw up a Kickstarter and the rest is history.
That's so awesome. I mean, the hospital story is one that I think a lot of people can relate with. We had Dr. Gary Fetke on and, you know, I think he wrote an article or gave a presentation that actually ended up getting him in trouble with medical boards, speaking to how bad hospital food is. So that must've been something that you were dealing with where it's like, oh my gosh, like how am I supposed to stay healthy in this environment where I have to be on my feet for 12 hours and work these long hours? I'm going to put myself in that hospital bed at some point if I keep this up.
Yeah. And it's like in all institutions are like this, the Army, prison, you know, it's like, we're not feeding people a species appropriate diet and nowhere close. And a lot of what we're doing with our food in the industrial way it's manufactured is just like maximizing the chance that you're going to get gut permeability and then you're going to become sensitive to a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. It's not like the vegetables and the nuts and seeds are inherently terrible. It's that, you know, you're eating a bunch of stuff in the environment that is making your gut super permeable. You're being reactive to things that normally you can handle in small doses. And then these people are getting set off with autoimmune conditions because we're basically maximizing the chance by eating this crappy food. And seed oils, I think, are kind of at the core of that. Seed oils, glyphosate, and the Triticum avestum, the form of American wheat that we have, is just extra glutinous. It's the dwarf wheat. So it's super high yielding, robs the soil much, much faster, but the yields go up. You know, it's the same as the grain and grass-fed beef. I heard you talk about that in your previous podcast. It's like, if you pay by the pound, you know, why not make it fatter? You know, but if you could inject it with mercury and the cow would still be alive, technically you'd get more poundage from that. It's like the Soviet Union making chandeliers so heavy that they fall and kill everyone. It's like, because they get paid by the pound. It's like, shouldn't you get paid by the nutrition? Shouldn't you get paid by the quality? Shouldn't you get paid by like the satiation that you provide your customer? It's like, we need a more sophisticated way of looking at this. But the institution is like giving, you know, a high schooler $20 and say, feed 15 of your friends. It's like, well, guess it's going to be chips. You know, yeah. It's like you kill the budget, and it's like, well, you're going to get the most processed, cheapest, nutrient devoid food you could possibly get, because you got to stretch that dollar. Mm-hmm. It's like, but you're not delivering any nutrition. You're not actually feeding them. You're giving this, the chemical slop that's sending the signals to delay hunger.
The lack of nutrients is a really good topic that we could probably dive into. And Harry and I, we were all fired up. We had a FaceTime earlier today. I was just at a conference in Nashville, and I literally had an epiphany yesterday, because I was looking around at, we had lunch. So they catered lunch in, and it was a box lunch with a bunch of sandwiches. And so I'm looking at what they're eating, and the sandwich is on a piece of like wheat or white bread that's this thick, incredibly refined, bleach white flour. There's turkey. It's turkey and roast beef, which is processed. You can guarantee that it's corn and soy fed, pasteurized cheese, lettuce that's probably been sprayed. There's a bag of chips that are fried in canola oil. Mm-hmm. I see a guy drinking Monster and hot Cheetos. And I'm not trying to judge people, but I just had an epiphany just thinking to myself, there isn't a single person in this room that's actually eating real food. Right. Everything they're eating is highly processed, very high caloric intake, but no nutrient content. And it's just causing them to be inflamed. And most people don't know what it feels like to have a lack of inflammation, which, to why your point, you're talking about getting out of the army. Your gut is in this chronically inflamed state. And then you start eating red meat and cutting out all the shit and giving your body bioavailable micronutrients. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been craving my entire life. It's just, most people don't know what that feels like. But if we could get them to that point, I can't even imagine the output in the world that would occur.
Absolutely. It is a kind of epiphany moment, and you try not to be like too judgmental, but it rocks your world when you realize how little nutrition is out there. And one of the things that I was shocked by is that, cause I wasn't ideological. I kind of follow, Stan Efferding's take. He's a vertical diet guy. He said
great. Like
80% of the benefit of red meat you get with grain fed, you know, that last little 20%, you kind of leave it on the table, but if it costs twice as much for that last 20%, you know, is it really worth it? You can kind of decide for yourself. Right. But when I dried it to put it into pemmican, I had like 60% of the yield. So for every pound of grass finished beef, I was making like almost time and a half of more product.
Wow.
And so the difference in price, you know, really it started off by pound, huge when I initially purchased it. But, you know, I have a 10 pound piece of meat from a grain fed animal and a 10 pound piece of meat from a grass finished animal. And because of that 60% yield, it's like, there's barely any difference in price. Like I could charge maybe a couple dollars less for the grain fed, but all this savings I was anticipating, like, oh, I'll do a commodity beef just for eat the meat you can afford, but it's mostly water. Mm. So even if the meat is 80% of the benefit, if it's 60% of actual meat, because you get all this water retention from eating a bunch of carbs, the cows get water retention too. 80% of 60%. Now we're starting, you know, I'm not a mathematician, but like you start to get into these fractional theoretical amounts of nutrition. It's like, well, you're actually getting like robbed. Mm. You're getting wholesale robbed when you get a pound of grain fed meat. You're not getting, you may be even getting half of the nutrition that you're getting from the grass finished animal. And then you're getting no omega-3. All that's gone. All the CLA is gone. You know, you're also getting no stearic acid. Stearic acid is the most saturated fatty acid. It's obliterated when you feed it grain. However, the palmitic acid, which is the next rung down on saturated fat, still intact. So the palmitic acid is still a very, very healthy saturated animal fat, not affected by the finishing of the meat. You know, they only feed it grain for the last 180 days. That's not enough to wreck the cow, because the cow ate grass for most of its life.
Right.
But that last 180 days, you know, you're really polishing off some of the more fragile nutrition and just wiping that off of the meat. And so, you know, I don't know, you know, the nitty details, but, you know, it makes me wonder what else we're losing when we do that.
Phil, what sort of things do you try to do to educate your consumer? Because I imagine part of it is you're selling to an audience that already knows what they want. It's the carnivore community. They know what they're looking for. But if you're speaking to someone who's just getting into this sort of thing, like, how do you speak to them so they understand like exactly what you're talking about and like the bar that they're holding holds all the nutrients that you need?
Well, I'm still struggling with that, honestly.
Yeah.
So my starting from the Kickstarter, our biggest problem has been selling out. So doing manufacturing this way, I'm basically bucking hundreds of years of food manufacturing. I'm saying everything that you've developed is worthless. I don't want any of your chemicals. I'm going to do it all scratch. I'm going to do only stainless steel. No plastic is going to touch it. You know, if I do a seal, it's got to be silicone. I don't want anything that has been developed over the last 100 years to make something cheaper. I basically instantly discard. So that puts me in an awkward position because now I have to kind of build all of this infrastructure up from scratch. Because I've taken the arrogant position of, well, you know, I know best. And it's like, well, I don't know best, but, you know, I have a suspicion that how we used to make food is better than how we're making food now, based on the history of human health and developing over the last, you know, 100 years. It seems to have, you know, taken a nosedive. And so my suspicion is that something about what we're doing in these modern processes, processing food, is bad. Seed oil, I'm looking at you. So from that, it's like my customer is extremely knowledgeable. So they know, like, I just got an email where I spent like four paragraphs delineating like how I make the pemmican and what goes into it, what doesn't go into it, why might there be heavy metals, why there might be more glyphosate, less glyphosate, how I've mitigated that. Regenerative farming, you know, none of the chemicals are sprayed on the fields because the fields are only for the cattle and not rotated through anything else. You know, so it's like little tidbits like that customers want to know.
Yeah.
So my customers are extremely knowledgeable and they're grilling me to make sure that I'm on my toes. And so the capacity is really limited. I can only make, you know, to give you a sense of scale, like 8,000 bars a month.
Wow.
And then we're done. So then the 8,000 in one bar is infinitely expensive because I cannot make it. So it's a question of like, I want to expose people to this idea as much as they need, but the carnivore community and the community that I've marketed to through affiliate marketing has been so successful. From educated people like yourself who want to know, it's kind of like all I can do to keep up.
Right.
It's great to have the behind the scenes perspective because Harry and I talk about this all the time. We like the other day we were like, fuck, like we wish there were just more companies out there that just, there was no compromising in ingredients and you're doing that. And I think what you're saying is that because there's no compromising, you're just not able to operate at the level that these beasts are. But as a result of that, you're getting a higher quality product, which for people like us that want to thrive and be metabolically healthy, you know, we'll pay for that 10 times out of 10. I'm not just saying that because we're not working together. It's because it's, you know, we want to feel our best and it's an infinite investment in your own health.
Absolutely. And it is an investment too in the technology. Like, why pay more when you can go to the supermarket store and just get, you know, something for a buck? It's yes. Like, well, details like the 60% yield, you know, the stearic acid, the omega-3 fatty acids, like these little details are value adds to doing things the ancestral way.
Yes.
And people who believe that and vote with their dollar make it happen. And so I'm completely like in gratitude to all the community that's reached out and said, you know, it really does matter what we put in our food. I don't want you to put in any of this crap. And I'm going to support companies that try to do this. As we expand, of course, we want to lower the price as low as possible. Yes. But the R&D cost of building from scratch, like the whole way we make food and just throwing it all away and saying, that's all garbage, I don't want it. That is horrendously expensive. And all of the, like the industry, like I think you mentioned, I forget which podcast it was, but like there are four companies that do all of the USDA beef. Yes. And it's all grain fed. And so like, that's like, I think 80%, 75 to 80% of all the meat in North America, not just the States, is run by four companies in less than 20 plants. Mm-hmm. So they have a stranglehold, and all the regulations about like USDA and keeping meat a certain way favors these big giant multi-billion, not billion, million, like 20 million per factory. But like, that's not accessible to a small company like me. Yeah. So how do we break in? And it's like, well, we have to have people who really want it, and we have to start small. We have to start humble. You know, I'm only direct to consumer. I can't be on shelves because I'm not big enough to get over that red tape. So in order for me to make the leap on that ladder, it's like, I have to make a huge leap. So we're staying here, building out our R&D, building out our sales, building community with each other. And then from there, we're going to need a huge amount of investment to get in, because it's like a cartel. It's just like, they have the market monopolized, and these small like abattoirs or butchers are really struggling. And that's why we've seen the last few years, like there's such a wait time for butchering. It's like people can't get their animals in. And if you don't butcher it in the right way from a USDA inspected site, like we do at Joyce, it's like, well, you can't sell it. Mm-hmm. It's basically invisible meat. Like we cannot sell that. It's gone. It's like, it's USDA or bust. You know, I've seen people even market their beef, their grass finished beef, as dog food. It's like, I know there are games that people play, like with the raw milk stuff, but it's like, yeah. I don't want to play any games. I want to do everything dress, right, dress and legal. And so that means that we have to stay humble for now.
Yeah. Is there anything that you've been surprised by having dove into the consumer packaged goods space and started to develop these products, like particularly around just the industry itself? Is there anything that you've been surprised by to see either competitors or just kind of people who you've come into contact with along the way on the supply chain side?
Yeah. I mean, I could do a whole podcast just about that. Yeah. but all the different ways that I was like completely unprepared. a long list. But I guess we really have this like pathology with how we make our food. Like the red tape is not there to make anyone safe. It's complete bullshit. So yeah. They'll have you spray chemicals on a surface and like not care about like the floor that's like emanating this smell of rot. And it's like, if you can smell it through your olfactory system, that particle is literally going into your nose. It's like, if you are aerosolizing mold or yeast, like bacteria, it's like, if you can smell that, that's not clean. Like, but it will pass inspection because if they swab their surface, you know, you have used quat or you have used a chemical. It's like the trouble with microbiology is that it is meticulously, to do it right, you have to be absolutely like insanely detailed. It's not just killing a bacteria. It's not letting the metabolites of that bacteria amass to a critical level. So for instance, in common parlance, the botulism, from the canned food. If a canned food is not sealed correctly, you can get botulism from it. It's one of the most deadly toxins known to man. And what's interesting is that bacteria is probably dead, you know, but it doesn't matter because the metabolite that it has been allowed to exist in unsanitary conditions for too long. And that's why they line cans with like BPA and all kinds of lovely endocrine disruptors. to kind of seal it away from those conditions. But if they mess it up, you can get sick from eating canned food. And that's because even though the bacteria is dead, their toxins and their metabolites persist. And so there's a lot of, you know, even supplements will be made from like black mold. You get vitamin C made from black mold. And it's like, well, they're trying to isolate the supplement or the vitamin C, you know, but it's like, but are they getting all of it? Mm-hmm. And some people find it, they switch brands, all of a sudden they feel better. And it's like, we're really hubristic when it comes to microbiology, like with the preservatives working outside your body, but not inside your body. It's like, come on, guys. And the same is true with the red tape. Basically, it means that if you are not a millionaire, like you shouldn't be making meat. And that is a horrible barrier to entry to a lot of honest and good people who put a lot of hard work into doing things the right way, according to science and according to nature, but not according to the red tape of the government. And so I'm trying to do all three, and doing all three is incredibly expensive. So what I would suggest is support your local rancher. Like, I forget who said it, but somebody who you can shake your hand and ask what the cow is eating.
Yes. You know,
it's like, yes, go find your local rancher, go meet somebody. It's like, you know, if shit hits the fan, you know, go out there with your tent and your AR and camp on your on your rancher's land. I'll defend your cows if you share something. You know, it's like building those relationships is really smart, especially in uncertain times like we live in today.
Yeah. And that's one of the things we loved about you when we first went on your website. You very openly show the farm that you source from, which is so rare. Most people don't actually reveal that. So, and you will get those detractors that are like, oh, you know, the carnivore bar, it's too expensive or whatever. And it's like, it's really not when you dollar cost average, because it's really a meal replacement. And also, like we love to say, we look at our health like holistic assets. So, you know, you might pay a little bit more of a premium, but you're getting the best quality meat that you Absolutely. Said you're also covering the red tape, 3 to 4 ingredients max. You're not compromising at all. What is that worth, right? That's what you have to go beyond just the dollar. And that's what we really try and talk a lot about in this podcast about.
Well, if you're downrange, it's worth your life.
Yes. There you go.
If the power goes out and your deep freeze full of meat goes, it's like, what do you do?
Yes.
It's like, for me, I lived in a tent for a year. So for me, it's natural to think that way, but I understand that it's not for everyone else. But to me, it just seems like a horrible vulnerability to be a carnivore and not have, you know, at least like a little bit of shelf-stable meat just around. And I just want that for myself. Like, I'm thrilled if other people want it and I can share it to them. But like, I'm my first customer, and my dream is to have like years worth of carnivore bars stored up. It's like, that's what I'm going to, if I make it big, that's what I'm going to spend my money on, is on my product.
Right. Yeah. Well, we want to do everything in our power to help you make that happen, because what we know that you're doing an amazing thing, and it's really just filling a need that's out there. I was just curious, kind of like to go back to the entrepreneurial side, because I know you mentioned how you kind of just sent it, you set up this Kickstarter and just were off to the races and just accepted, hey, there's a lot of things that I don't know, I'm just going to figure it out and make this thing work. Was there a particular moment where that sticks out, where you kind of picked your head up and said, holy shit, I think that this idea is actually going to work out?
I'm still waiting for that.
Yeah. It'll come.
I'm still waiting for that. So, because for me, it's a matter of, you know, not to be too like intense, but for me, it's a matter of life and death. It's like, if I fail and I go back to being a paramedic, I'm not going back to Jack Links. Like, no.
Yes.
And there's really nothing on the market with enough fat to sustain me so I can do a 12-hour shift. It's like, I would need the product I make to quit the job that I'm doing. So yeah. It's like, I mean, I'd be back to what I do, honestly, and I would just be making carnivore bars in my kitchen for myself every weekend, like clockwork. Because if you have a job where you are, you know, you're not just doing email and digital work, you're not a digital nomad where you have to actually go out into the field and you don't necessarily have control of what fast food restaurant you may pass or even have time to stop there. It's like, I haven't seen many ambulances in in drive-thrus. Yeah. Maybe that happens, but like, it's just like you're eating gas station food. You're eating trash. And it's like, that's not going to work for me. I will have to make pemmican for the rest of my life for as long as I want to be sane and healthy. And I'm no stud. Like, I'm not going to be an underwear model anytime soon, but I can think and I feel good. I feel like myself. And after my service and after Afghanistan, and I lost that and I got all foggy and confused and just down, you know, animal products like lifted the veil, and I had dreams and passions and ambitions and things I wanted to go do. And it's like, I won't trade that for anything.
Mm. Yeah. That mission focused brand is a different level of commitment. And I think both of us commend you on just putting your heart and soul on it. I think it's something that obviously shines through with the product and what you're trying to do. So, you know, it's amazing to hear your story and just get a little bit of the flavor of what's behind the brand. Cause
yes,
it's exactly what you expect.
100%. Well, thanks. We're trying.
And I see the people that are just listening to the audio, they can't see this. We see this awesome picture of Jordan Peterson here in the background. And I know you mentioned that Michaela Peterson was a huge influence for you to go into the carnivore diet. I mean, I would have to think, I know she loves your product. I have to think that that's pretty cool for you to have someone that you looked up to that is now an advocate of your product and using it and getting a lot of value out of it, right?
Mm. Yeah, he actually, when he got sick, he took a few bars to Russia.
Wow.
It's like, you know, so he's basically my hero, like free speech advocate, kind of like a divine individual, you know, there's this whole like soldier kind of idea of SPQR, this republic concept of Senatus Populus Cui Romanus. It's on every manhole in Rome. It's the idea that the people who vote, who decide the laws, are the people who also serve. So it's the idea that the Senate is the people, and there are the Romulus, they're Romans, they're the Roman legion. So it's like the soldier, citizen, soldier, republic, democracy, or semi-democracy. It is kind of the idea behind this divine individual. Like, you have to pay the cost, you have to serve your country and contribute something. And then you have a say, like a citizenship that you earn. You know, because when it's a collective, you're just a number. You know, it's easy to sacrifice a number. But if you're a person, if you're an individual, I feel like there's a lot of individualistic spirit. Obviously, it can go too far. But I really appreciate that. I find that inspiring and uplifting to kind of like, you know, make something of yourself, clean your room, like, you know, don't just sit and wallow in your sickness. Cause that's what I was, you know, 2016, when he burst into fame, it's like, I was kind of wallowing. I was like, I didn't know what I was going to do. I was terribly sick. I didn't have a plan. I was done all this research. I spent all this money, gotten nowhere. So for me, it represented hope. It was a cool story. I latched on. The science made sense with what I studied. And when I tried it myself, I felt infinitely better. So I was like, well, heck, why not? Why not try it?
Phil, maybe to put a bow on the conversation, could you just speak to the relationship? I know we've alluded to it a little bit, but like the relationship that you have with Joyce Farm, who you source from, like how important is that to you and your mission, just having these great relationships that you put into the product?
Sure. Joyce Farms is absolutely amazing. Like, I want to put them front and center, because they're the people who do the hard work. You know, they're raising the cattle, they're raising the meat, they are putting in the hours, and they're making sure with due diligence that it comes out the right way. So regenerative agriculture is this labor of love. I went to the Grass-Fed Exchange and I met Ron Joyce, and he was talking about genetics. And so I was like, what? And so I went over there to talk about genetics with this cool person that I had no idea who he was. And then they offered us a ride to the airport. And I was like, heck yeah. And so I chatted them up and they were impressed with my knowledge of the science. And I was impressed with their dedication to this genetic lineage, because they had to go to a ton of trouble to find grass-fed beef that would do well and get fatty enough. You know, because if you're selling a high fat food and they're only eating green leafy vegetables, essentially, it's like the genetics of that is something that we've moved away for thousands of years. You know, since Egypt, we've been fattening cattle on grains. So, you know, the poor farmers who wanted to get as high yield as possible, they would be grass-fed, grass-finished, because they couldn't afford the grain because modern fertilizer hadn't made it readily accessible. So these ancient Aberdeen heritage breeds, they found this specific strain that did really well on grass and grass finishing, not just grass fed. And the flavor was just incredible. So they sold primarily to East Coast restaurants where the flavor matter. And like they sell chicken, they sell all kinds of different things. If you taste their chicken and you taste any other, you're going to regret it, because you're going to be ruined forever. Like their chicken does not taste like any other chicken you've ever had. And you realize, like, I think you had a conversation that it's supposed to, you were talking about a cookbook. You were saying it's supposed to just have salt and pepper and that's it.
Yes. Yeah. Julia Child said that she just needs salt, pepper, olive oil, and like butter.
That's not possible with modern chicken. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to go to one of these heritage ancestral breeds all the way down to the genetics. Otherwise, it's not going to taste right. These recipes, these ancestral recipes, will not work, because we have such poor quality meat that all the flavor is just going to be dead, like turkey.
Yes.
And just dry as a bone. But turkey can actually taste good too. All of these meats can taste good if they are eating a species appropriate diet. And Joyce Farms sells a whole line. They're really proud of their pork. They went to an enormous amount of trouble for the pork. That's what he was talking about. And I pointed to my shirt and I was like, this is actually an extinct breed of cow. Mm. The horns together, if you see the Carnivore Bar logo, it's an auroch. So 50,000 years ago in France, in the cave Lascaux, there are pictures of cattle. And so ancestrally, we ate these, like, not your average cow. They were big and they were mean and they were fearsome. Like, they were probably bragging that they killed an ark, these artists, because they were not to be trifled. They were monsters, but they're extinct. We cannot eat a mammoth-based food. We cannot eat these auroch cattle. And so our brand is an auroch, because it's this heritage of, like, we are like the forgotten refugee children of this ancestral line of food that now we're eating, like, the leftovers. And now they're saying we should eat crickets. It's like, there's only so far down on the phylum tree that we can go and be healthy. And cows are pretty much it, because of the beta oxidation, because of the lipids. It's like crickets don't have the right fatty acids and the right amino acids. They have some nitrogen, some protein, but nitrogen is not bioavailable. It's got to be the amino acids. And so to wrap it up, back to Joyce, we tried like 20 or 30 different breeds of grass-finished beef. All of them tasted subpar. And so our mouths actually led us to the right answer. And then you test it and it's also the most nutrient dense. So the biochemistry and the ancestral taste, the flavor, coincided on the same verdict. And so we're like, well, that's what we got to go with.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, for our listeners, you know, we really just appreciate your story and your product. I think clearly your heart is into this product, like, as much as it possibly could be, through sourcing the ingredients correctly and just something that's actually applied to your own life. So it's really cool to just hear it all and, you know, get you on here and get to tell the story a bit. So we really appreciate you coming on, Phil. This was great.
Yeah, I appreciate your podcast. It's so great. Your lineup is like all of my fans.
No, that's why we were pumped to have you on, because we feel like there's so much synergy. You know, we're excited just to get to know you better and try and help shepherd more people your way, because we know that there's such a need for what you're doing. And we want to just, you know, for anyone that's listening to this, you know, we'll make sure to put a link to your product in the bio. And I know we also have a discount code too. But I mean, the product truly is fantastic, and we're just excited to get to have more of your bars. Cause if we're eating them three at a time, we're going to need a lot of refills. So.
Yeah. And it, you know, be free of your kitchen, you know, yes. Go adventure, go out in the world, move, get some sunlight.
Yes. It's like, it feels good. It feels good. It might be life-changing, actually.
And the coupon code that I gave you guys also stacks with the subscription, so that you get the absolute rock bottom price that you subscribe. You can cancel no cost. It's like, that's what I'm pricing it off of. You know, so don't pay full retail price. Use Meat Mafia's code.
Yes. Yeah. We'll link to that in the show notes. But yeah, man, this is an awesome conversation. It's great to just hear a little bit more about your story and that everything that goes into it. And, you know, hopefully we'll get to link up in person and crush a ribeye or something like that. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Let's do it.
We appreciate it, Phil. Thanks, man.